for invitation. It's a nice place, and I'm glad to give a talk to you today. So the title of my talk, as was announced, is about supersymmetric Wilson loops in four-dimensional n equals 2 or n equals 4 superanneal theory. And I will tell you briefly what was the purpose of this problem, what was the goal of it, and how one can solve it. So sometimes a goal back to 2000 and 2001, there were a couple of papers about supersymmetric circular Wilson loops. The basic papers are by Erickson, Semyonov, and Zaremba, and Drucker and Gross. So there were later some other works elaborating on this conjecture. The idea is that we consider n equals 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory and study a circular Wilson loop operator. So that's the usual trace of Halonymyova connection around a circular contour, which was supersymmetrized by coupling to one of the scalar fields of n equals 4 theory. So on the left-hand side, we have the Wilson loop operator. As you can see, there is a gauge field strength inside the integral and the scalar field. So that scalar field, which is denoted by phi, is just one of six of scalar fields of n equals 4 Young-Mills. So this is one of the basic versions where the direction in the scalar, the direction in the scalar field space doesn't move as we move along the Wilson loop line. So the conjecture by those two papers, which I mentioned, is that the expectation value of that Wilson loop operator can be exactly computed by using Gaussian matrix model. So it is summarized by the formula in the box. So here on the left-hand side, we have a expectation value computed in n equals 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory in four dimensions. So that's essentially given by infinite-dimensional path integral with the standard action. On the right-hand side, though, we have just a simple Gaussian matrix model that's a finite-dimensional integral, and it can be easily computed and worked out for arbitrary size of matrices. One can take large N limit, test different representations in which the Wilson loop is written down, and et cetera. So the right-hand side is essentially the answer to the left-hand side. So this conjecture originally was based just on one loop perturbative argument. And then it was tested against ADS-CFT correspondence. In other words, one can try to compute expectation value of Wilson loop operator by using a dual gravity dual description, where we think that the left hand side is exponent of the area in ADS-5 process 5 space, which is bounded by that Wilson loop on the boundary. So my talk today will concern only the gauge theory, and I will tell you how one can prove this exact result just using the gauge theory. So that's that proof. It, in other words, it's like all other computation, and even to some extent, it includes all instanton corrections. So maybe let me mention some notations here. So here, so I explained the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, the partition function of the Gaussian matrix model, which is written here, is the following. We integrate over the Lie algebra, G of the gauge group. In the case of U, N gauge group, that's just integral over anti-Hermitian matrices. And in the exponent, we have, well, 4 pi squared r squared over g squared Young nu, the decoupling constant. R is, well, r is the radius of the Wilson loop, and a is just the bilinear form on the algebra, positive bilinear form. So that's a Gaussian integral, convergent and variable defined. If we want to compute expectation value of a certain Wilson loop operator in some representation R, then we insert under that integral the operator exponent to 2 pi I R A and trace of it in some representation. So what was the naive perturbative argument? Well, that is simple. So if you take Feynman gauge and if you take a circle shape of the Wilson loop and then compute two-point correlation functions, then as you remember, we had under the sign of integral the gauge fields and the scalar fields. So the correlator of the gauge fields in Feynman gauge is like 1 over x squared, and the same for scalar fields. And now, actually, because of that form of propagator, one can say, first of all, that there is no divergence when two points collide, because, well, the propagator between the gauge fields, AA, and scalar fields, phi phi, cancel each other, almost. Well, the difference is actually a constant when you take a circular shape of the Wilson loop. So that cosine, so if you take 2 points on the circle with angles, with 2 angles like phi and phi prime, then that cosine comes from contracting two tangent directions to the circle. That's x mu dot and x nu dot coupled to the gauge fields. So we have a cosine from the propagator of gauge fields. And then we have 1 just for the propagator of scalar fields. So the difference comes to 0 when 2 points collide, and as well as denominator, like it goes like x squared. So, and actually for the circle, that numerator and denominator are precisely the same up to a constant. And the constant is proportional to 1 over r squared of the Wilson loop. So that means that if we compute just 2-point correlation functions for gauge field or scalar fields located on that circle, we'll get a constant. Now, the next step was to say the to conjecture the following, that those papers that I mentioned, they tried to compute some diagrams with vertices in a bulk, and they have found that they vanish in one loop, and later it was checked even at two loops, though the computations are much more complicated. And it was found that all those diagrams where vertices are somewhere in the bulk cancel each other, and so then people conjectured that actually maybe the precise, the exact answer is given just by summing all kinds of two-point diagrams where we just compute the correlation functions between points taken on the Wilson loop and connected by arbitrary number of propagators. So this was called rainbow diagrams. Now, for combinatorics of those rainbow diagrams, we can use just that matrix model, which I have written here. And make computations. So the purpose of this work was to try to prove that result or find whether it's wrong, maybe, just using the gauge theory without referring to gravity dual. To make the argument rigorous, we will work on a four sphere. Well, for n equals four supersymmetric theory, it's physically it's more or less the same because of conformal symmetry. But for more rigor, I will just talk about the theory defined on a four sphere, so that which is given by 1-point compactification of R4. So we will consider S4 in Euclidean signature, and I will argue that the path integral is, well, at least in the physical sense, more or less well defined, and we'll try to compute the partition function of n equals 4 supersymmetric theory on a four sphere, and the partition function with inserted Wilson loop operator. So the notations are the following. We take a circle of maximal size, which we say is placed on the equator, and then points, two opposite points will be called the north and the south pole. Or if you like to think in stereographic projection coordinates, then the north pole will also be taken as a origin of R4, and the south pole is like the infinite point of R4. So, well, we have the standard action. It's usually its simplest form is in d equals 10 n equals 1 supersymmetric notations, where we have 10 gauge components of gauge field reduced down to four dimensions. Four of them become gauge field, and six of them become scalar fields. The scalar fields are denoted by phi a. Psi is a Majorana-Weyl fermion with 16 components, and maybe the only term which I should mention more is this one. So this is this term which gives a mass to scalar fields, phi squared. It is proportional to the curvature of the four sphere, and it is obtained. It can be obtained in several ways. One of them is just to make a conformal transformation of the standard action on a flat space, and you'll get the term from the Laplacian. Or another way to argue is just that this action has the required superconformal. Yes, invariance.
So is this action Euclidean or?
This is Euclidean action.
But then what is psi? So the action is complex, or how do you view it properly?
This is action in Euclidean space, and psi is just, psi is a Weyl fermion, and we integrate only over holomorphic components of psi. In other words, in the measure for psi, we have only deep psi, but not deep psi bar. Mm-hmm. So basically, maybe your question is how to write down n equals 1 supersymmetric Young Mills in 10 dimensions in Euclidean space.
So the question. The path integral as a quantum.
We do it as a contour integral for bosons, and the contour will run over real fields in Euclidean space, so that the bosonic piece of the action is positively defined, and the bosonic part of the integral converges as it should in Euclidean space. The integral over fermions actually doesn't depend on a signature. It's just an algebraic operation. When you integrate over fermions, you take a Pfaffian, and that's what we're doing here. So.
But you said that it was Majorana-Weyl fermion. That's in Lorentz.
Standard That's right. Majorana Weyl fermion defined in Lorentz signature. So here is just a Weyl fermion, but in the path integral we integrate only over holomorphic components of psi. Oops. So okay, let me mention two points. So first of all, the partition function of the theory is well defined in infrared. In other words, there are no zero modes for this physical non-twisted theory on a phosphere. So this is because, well, of the following. For the gauge fields, we have no zero modes since there is no H1, no non-trivial H1 on S4. So there is no modal space for flat connections. There is no zero modes for the fermions because this is a space with positive curvature, and the Dirac operator doesn't have zero modes on the space. And finally, there are no zero modes for the scalars just because of that mass term in the action. So that means that we can safely integrate over all degrees of freedom, over all fields, and get hopefully some number or maybe some correlation function if you insert an operator. Also, thanks to n equals 4 supersymmetry, the partition function is also fine in UV, and we will not have problems with the regularization of small distance divergences. So let's try to compute it. Well, the idea that we will use is called localization, and we will use some supersymmetry of the theory to make a relation of the partition function of that theory, which I explained, to a kind of equivariant cohomology computation. So, well, this is the standard superconformal transformations of n equals 4 theory. So what is written here? The following. This is the transformation of the bosons, so the first line, and the second line transformation of the fermions, where we have two terms. One is proportional to the curvature for the gauge fields and scalars. And another term is just proportional to the scalar fields and derivative of the epsilon. So if we take, let's say, R4 flat space, and if we take a constant spinor epsilon, well, spinor epsilon parameterizes supersymmetric transformations. So for a constant epsilon on a flat space, we do not have this term. And so the first two terms are just supersymmetric transformations. The superconformal transformations are captured by allowing epsilon to depend on a coordinate. And on R4, epsilon just depends linearly on coordinate on R4. And so in that case, this term gives us special superconformal transformations. Generally, we say that epsilon is a conformal Killing spinor. Conformal Killing means that it is satisfies the following equation. The covariant derivative of epsilon is proportional to gamma mu times some other spinor. And one can check that on S4 that other spinor epsilon tilde satisfies similar equation in the right-hand side where we have epsilon and the term proportional to curvature of the phosphere. So in the case, if you take flat space limit, let's say, then epsilon tilde is just constant, and epsilon, and you can think about epsilon tilde is something which parameterizes special superconformal transformations, and epsilon parameterizes supersymmetric transformations. So in total, there are 32 symmetries, 16 plus 16, corresponding to 16 and 16 components of epsilon and epsilon tilde. Now, now let me mention the idea of localization. So So right, in some cases the integral is exactly equal to its semi-classical approximation. And for example, the known Dostermann-Heckmann formula says the following in the symplectic situation. If you have a symplectic manifold in the symplectic form omega and some Hamiltonian action of a torus on this manifold, so then we can integrate the volume form and exponent of the Hamiltonian, and as a result, as an exact result, get just in the right-hand side semi-classical approximation, which means that we sum over all fixed points of the torus section. Those fixed points are at the same time are critical points of the Hamiltonian, and so we take that classical contribution and divide by the one loop determinant. And in this situation, the one loop determinant is equal to the product of weights of that torus acting on the tangent space near each critical point. So more generally, this formula was written by Atiyah Bhatt and Berlin and Vernier in about 1980 in the following terms. So so if you have some manifold M on which group G acts, and if you consider a Cartan model for equivariant homology on that manifold, so let's say that Q will be the differential. It is combined from the Dirac differential, and well, and for each vector field on the manifold generated by action of the group G, we'll take a contraction with that vector field and multiply by a generator, by some generator in the algebra. So so this this generator Q is squares to zero on the objects which are invariant under G rotations. So in that case, if you take some a form which is Q closed on that manifold and compute the integral of the manifold of this form alpha, in the right hand side you'll get just contributions from the subset F of the manifold M, which is subset of fixed points of G acting on M, and we need to take a restriction of the form alpha on that space F. That's like classical contribution, and divide by the Euler class of the normal bundle of that subset F in M, and that corresponds to the one loop contribution in physical notations. So essentially, the n equals fourth theorem of four sphere, which I consider is one of super conformal symmetries. It the path integral for it looks like this situation, just in super, maybe a little bit more generalized. It is infinite dimensional, and it is in the sense of super manifolds. Here we integrate just over ordinary manifold. In supersymmetric theory, you'll have to integrate over a super manifold, and in that case, that Euler class should be taken as a super Euler class, where we take a ratio of certain weights for fermions and bosons in the theory. So, so in physical terms, the localization can be argued as follows. Let's say that we have some supersymmetry and the action is invariant under it. Then we can try to find such a functional V, which is invariant under bosonic transformation Q squared, and make the following trick. We deform the action by Q exact term, TQV, and we can show that formally the result doesn't depend on this auxiliary coupling constant T. So if you differentiate over t, we see that we'll get qv in front of the exponent. And then thanks to the fact that s is q closed and qv is q closed, so qv of that exponent is 0, then we integrate just q of something, and that's total derivative, and that's 0 unless we have some boundary contributions. Hopefully, in the present situation, we do not have any boundary contributions, because boundary in the present case coincides with the, well, the boundary is given by very large fields. And when the fields are very large, they have exponentially suppressed action in for this theorem in Kosky signature on a compact space. So here, we do not have contributions from the boundary, and can use such approach. So well, so then if you send the t to the infinity, you'll get just the essential contribution to the path integral will be given by the critical points of the QV term.
So this right. argument works if there is a fermionic symmetry, right?
Right.
Or always when there is at least one fermionic symmetry, you can
use. Well, not necessarily always, but if there is a fermionic symmetry, we can try to find such V and use it. If you can't find sufficiently nice V, so in other words, we need to find such functional V that Q of V will give us localization to some small space. So that means that Q of V has to be positive definite, positively defined, for this argument to work, and so that the zeros of Q V would be some smaller locus of the space of fields. And then we localize to the zeros of QV term. So of course, in order for this to work, the supersymmetry Q should be, you know, it should act somehow non-trivial way. If we take like dump example, just stupid example, when Q acts by zero on all fields. Well, that's like a trivial symmetry. Everything is invariant under Q, but in that case, we cannot also make any use of it, because Q for acting on any V will be zero. And so that means that we do not actually localize theorem or something. So we will see in the following how supersymmetry of n equals 4 helps us to get right Q for this situation. So we are exactly now at this problem. We have 32 superconformal symmetries, and we want to use some of it to make the localization argument. Now, of course, we should use some supersymmetry which preserves that Wilson loop, but that Wilson loop is preserved by 16. It is a half BPS operator. So we still have some freedom to pick up a Q, and we'll try to do the following: impose some additional restrictions on Q. First of all, later I will mention that this approach works for n plus 2 theories as well, and it works in that case when we do not use essentially a conformal part of that supersymmetric transformations. It means that the Q operator is analogous, is more analogous to the usual supersymmetry transformation than to special superconformal transformation. We summarize it by the following. First of all, the norm of the Killing spinor epsilon should be constant on S4. So this is similar to the supersymmetry on R4. And second, there should be no conformal transformation in the operator Q squared. So generally, Q squared can contain some dilatations or special conformal transformations, and et cetera, some transformations which change scale. So, but for some conformal Killing spinors epsilon, in the right-hand side here, there are no such transformations. So instead, on the right-hand side, we have a couple of transformations. lambda v and r. So lambda v is a Lie derivative along the vector field Vm given by this bilinear in conformal Killing spinner epsilon. So this is a rotation of S4. We will choose it in such a way that that rotation, the lines, so the orbits, so that the Wilson loop will be located at the orbit of that rotation. So it is invariant under the rotation. And two fixed points of that rotation are called the north and the south pole, located at the farthest distance of the Wilson loop. Now, the extra term here is the R symmetry. It rotates scalar fields. So actually, it acts in the following way. There are, in total, six scalar fields. Two of them, well, we break that SO6R symmetry into SO4 and SO2. And there is SQ2 left inside SO4. So R symmetry transformation acts as a sum transformation of this SU2R symmetry. So so in this sense, it will also work for N plus 2 theory, which has SU2R symmetry. So let me just briefly show you the table with all details about the symmetry. So that's how we choose splitting of the SO10 bosonic symmetry. It is convenient to use n equals 2 notations. In that case, we form a n equals 2 vector multiplet from the gauge fields to the scalar fields and half of fermions. And another multiplet is n equals 2 hypermultiplet, which is formed from four scalar fields and another eight components of fermions. So here we have the charges under various SU2 and SO2 groups acting on fermions. So one can see that, well, it's a pretty standard thing. So what I should mention here is that we pick up epsilon like in n equals 2 vector multiplet, like a fermion in n equals 2 vector multiplet. So epsilon has a non-zero components at the same, those non-zero components like psi left and psi right for the vector multiplet. And so all computations which are done here, they can be done for n equals 2 supersymmetric theory. So now, more precisely, this is a concrete form for epsilon. So epsilon s hat and epsilon c hat are just some constant spinors. And this is a conformal Killing spinor on a four sphere. It can be obtained from conformal Killing spinor on R4 using a Weyl transformation. And then you'll get an extra square root of the distance from the North Pole. So so the final point of this is that the transformation Q squared is a combination of the following. It is some anti-self dual Lorentz SU2 rotation, which acts on what I call 1-2 plane and 3-4 plane in the flat coordinates on R4, in stereographic projection coordinates on R4. Then it is a gauge transformation by the combination of those scalar fields. And then it is some R symmetry rotation and SU2 R left subgroup of SO6 symmetry. So that R symmetry rotation, it acts non-trivially on those four scalar fields, phi 5, phi 8, and it acts non-trivially on those fermions, as you can see on this table, on the fermions of vector multiplet. So, the action in the Wilson loop are q-invariant, and so we can try to use localization argument and find a suitable V. Well, before that, I should mention that that localization thing, it works nicely when you have off-shell closed supersymmetry. Well, that's not what we are given from the very beginning. Actually, there is no way to close all superconformal symmetry group of 1 equals 4 using just some, you know, finite number of auxiliary fields. But actually, what we can do is for an arbitrary superconformal symmetry for just one generator or one linear combination of generators of 1 equals 4 superconformal group, we can close off-shell of that symmetry. And this is done using Berkowitz's approach. His paper in 1993 was about 10-dimensional Young-Mills, 10-dimensional plus 1 super Young-Mills. And he has found that one can add always for any supersymmetry generator, one can add 7 auxiliary fields, which are called chi A, and then deform the supersymmetry transformations in the following way. The auxiliary fields are added to the right hand side for the transformations of fermions, and the auxiliary fields transform by something proportional to the equation of motion for the fermions. So it happens that such a correction to the transformation, to the supersymmetric transformations, it works when the set of 7 Majorana-Weyl fermions called nu I satisfy the following equations. And for any spinner epsilon, these equations can be solved uniquely up to SO7 transformation, which just permutes, well, which rotates a basis for this chi I field. So that is 7 acts on this index I. So the bottom line of this is that for any given superconformal transformation, we can write down off-shell closure for it, which is equivalent to the original partition function when we integrate those free auxiliary fields ki. So, what about V term? Well, for the V term, it's in this case, it's we will take just namely the following. We'll take the right hand side for the transformations of the fermions, this one. We'll take a complex conjugate of it. And we write down the bilinear form between fermion and the bosonic term, which stands on the right hand side for transformations of the fermions. So in this case, the restriction of the Q, well, the bosonic part of the QV term is given by Q acting on the fermion. So that's cube psi bar. And for the fermionic part, which is not written here, is when we act by Q on this cube psi bar term. So we'll talk about fermionic term later. So far, we just need to understand this one. And we can see just from this definition that it is positively defined. So the theory localizes to the set where cube psi vanishes, actually. So when we send t to infinity, only the points where cube psi equals 0 matter. So now I do not present here the details for solving the equations cube psi 0 at which can be found at the preprint in archive, the result is that the only solutions of the equations cube psi equals zero are given by the mode phi zero, that phi zero field equals constant and all other fields vanish. And phi zero is that one which couples to the loop. Exactly. Yes. So those equations are actually overdetermined equations. So in other words, the number of equations is bigger than the number of variables, and they overdetermined system, and it happens that there are no non-trivial solutions except this solution. So, well, up to one up to one subtle point with scalar auxiliary fields. So I have written, I have summarized that point here. So by dots, we denote the terms which do not have any non-trivial solutions. So they involve all other scalar fields, all other gauge fields, and auxiliary fields. And so what I write here is a piece of the action of the original Young-Mills action, which includes a scalar field and which includes auxiliary field, and a piece of the Q-exact action, which includes scalar field and auxiliary field. So one can see that they enter as a full squared. And so, well, the terms which are knitted in these dots, they actually have like d phi squared terms, which says that phi is a constant. But now from this term, we can conclude that chi is just equals chi equals to minus 1 over r phi 0. And that means that when we send t to infinity and integrate over auxiliary fields, essentially from those two terms, we get a coefficient 3 over r squared times the 0 mode of the phi field. So to summarize, the localization at the classical level tells us that we should integrate over the zero mode of a phi zero field with the coefficient, which is however modified compared to the original action. Instead of 2 over r squared phi zero squared, we should take 3 over r squared phi zero squared, because one of the auxiliary fields k, it is localized to the constant mode, which is equal minus 1 over r, the mode of the phi zero fields.
That follows from solving Q times V.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, this is a consequence of solving Q psi equals 0.
To B.
Huh?
To B.
Right. So, okay. So, well, let's evaluate this contribution. So we'll take a constant mode phi zero denoted by A on S4. So we take this piece in the action, and to compute it, we need to integrate over S4. So we multiply it by the volume of S4. And well, luckily, we get precisely the coefficient in that matrix model, which appeared in the Erickson, Semenov, Zaremba, and Drucker-Gross conjecture. So all factors here, they combine to the right coefficient for the propagator. So that tells that we are on the right track. And to finish the proof, we need to compute the denominator in the Tatier-Bott localization formula, which is like one loop correction to the semi-classical approximation. So in other words, what we have just done, we evaluated the action plus Q exact term in that exponent on the set of points cube psi equals 0, which is analog to this set F. Now we need to compute the denominator, which is a product of weights of Q squared action acting on tangent space to tangent space to the space F for all fields. So, and this is this computation looks like an index computation. In other words, it doesn't detail, it doesn't depend much on the details of the theory. It depends just on the structure of the space of fields considered as a module, as a representation space for this, well, for some U1 contained in U square acted on the space. So this is like the index problem. And it is a linear problem. It can be treated by a T.S. Singer theorem. So before we do that, we will simplify a little bit the notations of that physical supersymmetric transformations to make the theory look like a cohomological field theory. Yeah. Well, I should mention that even though the theory is non-twisted, we still can write it in this situation in TFT-like notations. So, well, this done as follows. Just for taking nine of the gauge fields, well, of gauge fields and scalar fields, for I am running from 1 to 0, we denote epsilon gamma m psi as psi m. So delta a m becomes psi m. And then, well, there are remaining seven degrees of freedom for the fermionic field psi. And so we decompose them over seven spinors chi I, sorry, nu I, which were introduced when we considered off-shell closure of the supersymmetry. So, so in total, we have nine spinors gamma m epsilon and seven spinors nu I epsilon. Those, that set of 16 spinors on S4, in each point they are orthogonal to each other and they are all normalized to one. So they define for us a transformation to a basis consisting to a basis over which the spinor psi can be decomposed, and the coefficients are called psi m and chi I. And with respect to that basis, for fermions, the transformations look really simple. So delta m is just psi m, and delta chi I is that auxiliary field chi I, well, plus something. So that something, it is proportional to the curvature of the gauge field, well, projected to in a certain way to those basis elements. So the I have denoted the term by Si of Am, and we should think about Si as equations in TFT-like theories. So this is the set of the transformations. Now, well, here are the details about the equations Si. So that's a contraction between the spinor nu I and that curvature term. So now let's shift the auxiliary fields ki by these equations and denote them as hi. Well, for all these transformations, for all these change of variables, we have no Jacobian. Well, the Jacobian is identity. Indeed, when we changed a basis to just to this fields psi m and chi I, it was a unitary transformation pointwise. And here it is just a shift of the fields ki, not involving other fields, so the Jacobian is one again. Now in this new notations, the C++ transformations look very simple and standard. So there are two doublets, AM like and chi I. So the transformations, the super partners of A, they transform by a Q squared action, and the transformations of H I transform by a Q squared action again. I denoted R, curled R, as a bosonic transformation which corresponds to Q squared. So in the present case, R is the following: it's just a rotation of the S4 plus some R symmetry transformation which acts in the space of fields. So this is like equivariant cohomology complex, where we can think about this transformation as Dirac differential. So psi m is analogous to the d of AM, where D is the Dirac differential, and this is that rotational part. So, so in this case, some linear algebra shows that the one loop ratio of the determinants for the PV action is the following. It is the determinant of the R acting on the space of this fields. Of this fermionic-like doublet divided by the determinant of R acting on bosonic-like doublet.
What do you actually need to know to calculate R? You need to know only the supersymmetry?
To calculate the determinant, you mean?
Yes.
Just
R itself.
To calculate R itself, we need to know just the supersymmetry which we take. So Q squared is R.
But you don't need to know the action explicitly and the Q V term explicitly.
To calculate R, no, we do not need to know that Q V term. But we need to know that Q V term to make sense of the determinants. So, well, first of all, what is written here? Here it is written the determinant of some operator R, which acts on the space of all fields HI, divided by determinant of R, which acts on the space of all fields AM. So that space is infinite dimensional space. Now, in the usual case of RTA Singer framework, such a ratio can be defined by using what is called index of elliptic operator. Let's say that there is some operator, which differential operator, which acts from this space to this space, and which commutes with R. So in that case, RTA Singer show that that the determinant restricted to the zero. Well, first of all non-zero modes of that operator, of that elliptic operator, which maps bosonic fields to fermionic fields. So all non-zero modes of them goes in pairs. And the weights of R acting on those non-zero modes, they cancel each other. What remains on the zero modes. And for elliptic operator, for an elliptic operator, the space of zero modes is finite dimensional. And the determinant of R acting on that finite dimensional space is well-defined. And the situation here is similar. So QV term allows us to rigorously define or compute that ratio of determinants.
Can I ask one question?
Right.
So this one loop determinant, it doesn't depend on the defect, on the Wilson loop. It depends only on the action.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. So, to compute the determinant, it is more convenient first to compute the character. In other words, so we have some linear problem. We need to compute the product of weights of certain U1 acting on some vector space. Well, it is an infinite dimensional vector space, but still. How do we do that? Instead of computing the ratio of determinants, we will compute the difference of characters. So that's a trace of the space of AM fields of exponent of R minus trace of the space of HI fields over exponent of R. And if we compute that index as a power series in some generator, in some U1 generator of R, we can extract the weights acting on all those fields. So here it is written what is I tried to explain more or less just in the previous slide. But well, let the space of those bosonic fields M consist of sections of some vector bundle called epsilon zero, and that fermionic space epsilon one. And the term QV, it gives us a certain operator D, which maps fields in epsilon zero to fields in epsilon one. And for all non-zero modes, that operator D shows that the contribution of non-zero modes canceled against each other. So what survives in this difference only contribution of zero modes. So so here it becomes slightly more technical. Actually, in the present situation, the equations SI over M, they are not elliptic equations, but they are transversely elliptic with respect to that U1 action of S4. And in this case, the Thiel-Singer, a little bit modified Thiel-Singer theory still works for transversely elliptic operator. The index in that case is not necessarily some finite polynomial in generator. It can be an arbitrary series like Laurent series in U1 generator Q, because the space of zero modes for transversely elliptic operator can be infinite. Still, what is good about transversely elliptic operator is that the space of zero modes restricted to each weight of U1 action is finite. So for each weight, we can compute the multiplicity and then the take product over weights. So here I will summarize just the result of the computation of the index for this operator on S4. And I put it at the contributions to this index from two different terms separately. So n equals 2 vector multiplet contribute to the index as follows, and n equals 2 hyper multiplet as follows. So Q is a parameter, is a formal parameter which generate U1 action. In other words, if U1 is parameterized by like exponent to I alpha, where alpha from 0 to the pi, then Q equals exponent to I alpha. In other words, Q belongs to a circle. Absolute value of Q equals 1, and Q parameterizes U1 group. That U1 by which Q square acts. So if that's written in condensed notation, but really it should be understood as a series in Q. So if we decompose it in series, we'll get something like Q to the n term multiplied by 2n or something. Well, like 2n. Well, it's easiest to see it from this expression. So we'll get like 1 plus 2q plus 3q squared, etc., and just multiplied by 2q. So in that case, multiplicity of q to the n will be 2n. It means that each subspace to which U1 acts by the weight n enters with multiplicity to n. And that's precisely the information which we need to extract from the index to compute the ratio of determinants. So, well, actually in the n equals 4 case, the contributions to the index from the vector multiplet and hyper multiplet precisely cancel each other, and we get the determinant 1. So, and that means that the conjecture about the Hermitian matrix model is correct. It's just a Gaussian matrix integral with nothing more in it. Well, however, for an arbitrary n equals 2 theory, that one loop determinant looks like that. Well, as I explained, the multiplicity of the weight n is proportional to n. And that infinite product of multiplicities can be combined into something called Barnes G function. Well, so this is this is the definition of the function h of z in terms of the Barnes G function as an infinite product. This is a convergent. This is a convergent thing, and it is very well defined analytic function. Moreover, it behaves very well on the when z is imaginary. And this is the case for the physics that we consider. So the bottom point is that that one loop determinant for n equals 2 theory, it is given as a product of all weights of a joint representation numerator, that's for vector multiplet, and a product of all weights in arbitrary representation in which we take matter in n equals 2 theory. And this is the ratio of these two, complicated but still analytic and somewhat explicit functions. And that's the answer for the one loop determinant in the n equals 2 theory. So to get finally correlation functions for the Wilson loop, for the circular Wilson loop, you need to integrate in the end of the Lie algebra with such determinant inserted under the integral. So I think I'm finishing here. I'll just mention that some consideration not so rigorous as the previous one, but still they point strongly to contribution, to how one can compute contribution of all instantons. And it happens that it looks like that the theory in this case looks like a fusion of two topological theories, namely one topological theory on the north and one topological theory on the south, with north and south being the two fixed points of Q squared action. The theory near the north looks like TFT with equations F plus equals zero, and near the south like TFT with equations F minus equals zero. And then those self-dual equations and anti-self-dual equations, they fuse at the equator. So it's probably that all instanton contributions are captured by this kind of formula, where the instanton Nekrasov denotes the partition function and that TFT U1 equivariant theory near each of the two poles. Well, and it resembles maybe an OSV formula, but I do not have much to say about it now. So, I'll stop here. Thank you.
And there is another formulation of the Wilson loop, which is useful in terms of a normal matrix model. Do you know what twist you have to do to get that one?
I've heard about normal massive model. Well, I'm not sure what is the Wilson loop actually. Do you know how it is? How is it coupled to scalars?
Sorry, in the matrix model, all the features from a normal matrix model.
Right.
An insertion of straight or z plus z bar.
Right. But I thought that this is that normal matrix model. It works also for the same Wilson loop, which I considered here. So your question is how to make localization to get that kind of normal matrix model. I see. Well, the answer is I don't know. I actually thought about it. I don't know. So what I've got is just Hermitian matrix model, not normal matrix model.
Thank you.